We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Untangle. I'm Patricia Karpis. Today I interviewed guests Bridget Hilton and Joe Huff, who co-authored a book called Experiential Billionaire: Build a Life Rich in Experiences and Die with No Regrets. Intriguing, right? I was curious to hear their stories and what led them here. Armed with a sense of urgency after his dad died, Joe became painfully aware that there was no guarantee of how much time he had left to live. He began focusing on doing the things in life, love, work, service, adventure, that gave his life meaning. Bridget is also obsessed with experiences and living her life with a zeal for big leaps of faith. They say, imagine you had 1 year to live. Take out a sheet of paper and write down the top 10 things you'd want to do right now. Then look at that list and see how many of those things you're actually doing right now. Hint, do more of what matters to you, what you love while you're here. Start now. They share some of their great adventures as well. And spoiler alert, they're not all big things. It's often the little things that fill us up as well. As always, we're Untangle, the podcast from Muse, the brain sensing headband dedicated to unlocking your brain's potential, and Meditation Studio, the 5-star app. Check out all the free meditations at choosemuse.com/meditationstudio. Now over to Bridget and Joe. Hi, Bridget. Hi, Joe. It's great to have you both here today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So I wanted to ask you, and maybe you can each answer this, what inspired you to live this kind of a life, which we'll talk about in this interview? What inspired you? What brought you here?
That's a long journey, but we can go into our backstories real quick.
Yeah, we just woke up one day and we just decided we wanted to live the most rich and rewarding lives. And it was just this really easy transition. No, I'm kidding. It was actually, it's a really long process and it was a growth process, but I can tell you again, the backstory of it all. We both came from immense wealth. We were both very, very rich. Oh, no, wait, that was someone else entirely. I grew up in the Midwest and my parents both, it was a typical blue collar family. My parents actually met on an assembly line making brake pads. So my closest experience to a trust fund was trusting my parents would fund the occasional trip to the ice cream truck, which was definitely a fun experience. But lifestyles of the rich and famous were a pretty far off dream for young me. And I made some poor choices in high school where I missed about 27 days of one single semester of my sophomore year of high school. And I barely managed to graduate high school. So college wasn't really an option. I didn't have a lot figured out and I didn't have a lot of direction. And then right before my 18th birthday, something happened where out of nowhere, my otherwise seemingly healthy 48-year-old dad had a sudden heart attack that turned out to be a lot more than that. It turned out that he had advanced stage heart disease and his heart was failing. And I'll spare you the longer part of the story, but it was really touch and go for a while. And we thought we were losing my dad. And it was this really powerful near-death experience that gave me this great gift, because while my dad was going through this, I was really just constantly thinking about all the things my dad hadn't done yet that he still wanted to do because he thought he would have more time. And B, I was just completely suddenly aware that there wasn't a guarantee on how much time I had to fulfill my goals and live my dreams. And again, luckily, my dad's story has a happy ending because he got a heart transplant and I got to witness him change his whole life and live this second life. And it was really powerful because the second life that he lived, he had to redesign his whole life because he thought he was going to have more time to do all these things that suddenly he realized that was a terrible strategy. So when he started off on his bonus round that he affectionately liked to call his second go at life, I started trying to figure out how to do all the things I wanted to do. And I didn't really know where to start. I didn't have any connections. I didn't have much money. So I just did the only thing I could think of, which was I actually thought about what I would regret not doing if I found myself in a situation like my dad suddenly, where I was suddenly out of time. And I wrote those things all down in like a list. And this wasn't like a bucket list. This was a kid that just barely graduated high school, the things I wanted to do, but I hadn't made any plans to do those things yet. But I took that list and I started putting those things on my calendar. I started actually picking days in the next weeks or months and putting these things down to see if I could figure out how to do things that I wanted to do, because I was armed with this urgency from my dad's experience. And something really magical happened just from those two things. I started actually doing a lot of things that I, prior to then, had really just dreamed about and had no plans for. It's like I wound up trying stand-up comedy. I'd always wanted to try stand-up comedy, but I signed up for an open mic night and I just went and did it. And it was super fun. And I had always wanted to ride a motorcycle. So I wound up taking some motorcycle lessons and getting my motorcycle license. And I had always wanted to move to the beach. So I found a couple of roommates and moved away from everyone I grew up with, moved to the beach, and all of these things that I don't think I ever would have done. And most of the things that I actually was doing that were on this list weren't like things that cost a lot of money. They just took time that I probably would have wasted if I actually didn't have that sense of urgency. And I kept that urgency mindset from that early age through my 20s. It led to just a whole different life. I want to be clear though, it wasn't like I was getting rich financially. I was filling my life with all of these experiences. And I thought after seeing what happened with my dad, that that was the choice. You could try to work every day of your life and try to make money, or you could try to have fulfilling experiences. I was choosing experiences. But those experiences, the crazy thing is, the more experiences I had, the more people I met. And a lot of those people became lifelong friends. And then a lot of those friends turned into some of the most meaningful relationships in my life. And one of those friends called me one day and asked me if I wanted to start a business with them. And again, I told them, did you not remember the part about me barely graduating high school? Because I'm not sure I have any business experience. At the time, I was literally working like a couple jobs. I was working at a restaurant and I was working nights bartending. But I was doing all these fun, interesting things and getting people together to do all these fun experiences. And my friend said to me, you'll figure it out. You always seem to figure out how to get interesting things done. And that was really cool because that was the first time I realized the value of my experiences beyond my personal fulfillment. I was actually creating a value that I think other people could see. It turned out that was a great idea because those things did have value and we were able to successfully build a business together, he and I. And again, gross exaggeration of a business from when we started. We started off with a two-person graphic t-shirt company in a small garage, but that morphed and grew into a shipping and warehousing company with over 100 employees. Because again, we just kept figuring out how to get things done. But that led to a decade of building that company, which was really ironic as I finally got financial security for the first time in my life. I looked up and realized I'd been working for 10 years on something that I actually didn't intend to do. And my life was feeling really empty and bankrupt. And that coincided coincidentally, that moment in time, with when my father's 10 years had passed and my dad's bonus round actually came to an end and he'd finally passed away, sadly. But when that happened, I realized that I had stopped doing the things I wanted to do again. And it inspired me to take this big leap of faith and find that urgency again to actually look for the things that would matter to me. And it was this moment where my dad's funeral, I remember thinking about that list again, and how that urgency had changed the way I approached life and how I sought out fun and purposeful things and tried to fill up my time. And again, like that was one of those moments that it just really sank back in, that statement that we all hear, that our time is our most valuable resource, but we don't really understand it. Most of the time, we don't really believe it or act on it. I left that company that I spent a decade building and decided to try to do something that I really wanted to do, which was start a company that helped other people. And I was terrified at this moment, but it turned out to be the best decision ever, because after that decision, I wound up getting to travel the world for the next year, funding charity organizations with this new company that I was building. And we got to provide clean water to people in Haiti and build schools in Guatemala and do all kinds of cool things. And we worked with victims of human trafficking in Southeast Asia and Indonesia. And it was because of those things, those experiences of helping other people improve their lives, that I found an immense value in my own life, because that was the first year that I felt like I was truly living my ideal self, as cliche as that might sound. But I really felt this moment where I was like, this is what I should be doing. And thankfully, I was doing that because that's when Bridget reached out, because she heard about me doing some work there, doing some charity work, which wasn't that common in our circles of friends, and reached out to me to see about doing something else together. I'll let Bridget jump in from there and tell you where.
I'm very curious. You said Bridget called you, Bridget jumped in, but how did you meet each other? Whose story is that? Or is it in both of your stories?
Sure. So that's in both of our stories. So when Joe and I met in 2012, we instantly felt like family because we both came from a very similar background. I'm from the Midwest as well. I'm from Flint, Michigan, which I'm sure you've heard of from things like A Water Crisis and Michael Moore movies, not super positive things. When I was a kid, my big dream was to be in the music industry or to be like a rock star. That's what I dreamed about all the time. But obviously, I was not surrounded by anyone in the entertainment industry. It's not like growing up in New York or LA where you have friends, parents that work in those types of places. So I had to start from the very, very beginning. Some of my first jobs when I was like 14 to 19 were like picking up trash at music festivals and getting coffee for people at radio stations and all these things that were paying $0 or $5 an hour. But those were really the building blocks to get me to where I wanted to go. And when I was 19, I got a job at Universal Music Group. I'll never forget, because at the time I was literally living in my car and at my friends' apartments on their couches. And I felt like I won the lottery. I think it was $20,000 a year I was making at the time, but I felt like I was a billionaire. So yeah, after that, I got an opportunity. Well, actually, it turned out it was a negative experience at first. My branch in Detroit shut down at Universal and I was forced to find another job, but I ended up moving out to California, which as a kid was like a huge dream. So it was this negative experience turned into a very positive one where I moved out here, which is where I still live. And I got this front row seat to this rise of all of these people that are now the biggest artists in the world. I got to work with Taylor Swift and Drake and Rihanna and Lady Gaga and The Weeknd and all of these people that at the time their careers were just starting. And so it was a really awesome experience. And every night during that period, I was hanging out in all these great places. I was literally going to like the Grammys and movie premieres and all this crazy stuff. But I would still go home at night to my dilapidated 5-roommate house in the valley. So it was a very interesting experience. But one day in my office, I actually saw a video of a woman hearing for the first time. It was this big viral YouTube video at the time. It was of someone that was around the same age as me, and she was receiving this special hearing aid. And it was like this crazy powerful video. And it just gave me this light bulb moment of music had meant so much to me in my own life. And I don't know where I would have been if I didn't have that big dream of being in music. And so I thought about all the people that in their life that didn't have hearing and sound. And it gave me an idea of starting a company that would help other people get hearing. And so at this point, Joe and I had met through a mutual friend, but we weren't super close, but he was the only person that I knew that was working in charity. And so I sent him this video and I basically pitched him on this idea of, let's start a company that sells audio products and then give the proceeds to giving people hearing for the first time, just like in the video. Long story short, that's what we did. We high-fived and jumped on a plane to China and started sourcing products for this company that's now called Listen. That was in 2012, and we've been partners ever since. And lots has happened since 2012. We've been through truly like the highest of highs, lowest of lows together. We Listen had so many ups and downs and so many incredible experiences. At one point, we were really killing it, quote unquote. And as like an example, we were on like Forbes and Inc. 30 under 30 one year. All these people started reaching out to me and being like, oh my God, you guys are doing so well and you must be getting so rich. And it was really funny because at the time we were still really hustling and not paying ourselves a lot. But what we were doing is traveling around the world and giving people hearing and doing all these incredible things. So the book title that Joe and I eventually wrote came out of that moment where we would respond to these people and say, well, we're not exactly billionaires. We're not like Dr. Dre, but we are experiential billionaires. And that's how the book and how everything came to be, because we realized that all these incredible experiences that we were having were so much more important than any number in a bank account could ever be.
Let me ask you a question. You were pretty candid in the book about coming from depression in your background. Was that when you were a child or when you were older, or was that tied to being frustrated with not living in alignment with your true purpose? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I would say that I definitely went through periods in my youth of that. I was never a cool kid, quote unquote, in school. I was more of the artsy, like choir band type kid. And I went through periods of it when I was younger, but the biggest period of depression that I ever went through was in 2020 when things all came crashing down. It's really hard to stay stable when it's like a domino effect of your life. In early 2020, I got separated and then I moved cities, ended up moving back to LA. And then all of these things started happening. COVID obviously happened, and then my place got broken into, and then we had to let go of some employees that were like family to us. And then Listen's business basically got cut in half during that time. And our charity partners stopped traveling around the world, obviously. So that all resulted in this huge depression I went through. And at the time, Joe and I sat down and we were like, what are we going to do? Everything has crashed down. We don't know when our company is going to be stable again. So what's the next thing that we can do to truly fulfill our purpose? And we asked people that we knew, like our friends and family and whatnot, what's our value in life? When you look at us, what is our next purpose? And everybody said, tell your stories. Everybody said, write a book, do talks, teach at schools, et cetera. Things that can help others follow their dreams, and that will fill your own cup. And they were right. And so that's the part that we started writing this book and writing down our stories. And it really did help me get out of that really terrible place.
You said that you got together, you created this company called Listen, and you went around the world helping people get their hearing or funding different programs. But how did this turn into an experiential dream train for you guys?
We only share our stories so people understand that wherever you're at, once you figure out how to have a vision and how to actually start to take steps towards it, anything can happen. And a lot of the times, a lot more than you imagine can happen. And with Listen very specifically, Bridget saw a video of a woman hearing for the first time and thought, I want to do that. I want to give someone hearing. I want to change someone's life by helping give them hearing. How can I do that? And she came up with the idea of creating a company that sells headphones and speakers to do that thing, right? And that's what she showed me, that I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's what I want to do too. I want to do that too. So the whole premise of Listen was, how do we have the experience of giving somebody else hearing and help them have that experience? And that led us to all these opportunities to have more and more experiences. But it was really because we were seeking experiences, not something else. I think the mindset, the experiential mindset, is so ingrained for people like Bridget and I, because that's how we found ourselves in a position to make those changes and choices. Bridget wound up being at Universal because she wanted that experience of working in the music industry and visualized that. And for me, I was trying all kinds of things that led me there. That's really, I think, the powerful piece. If you're chasing the experiences, more experiences will become available and show up in your life that will continue to create a cycle of more people that you bond with that will then create more experience opportunities and so on.
So what is an experiential mindset? What is that mindset that within starting a company and traveling around the world created this ability to do all of these different experiences? If somebody else wants to do this, do you have to be an extrovert? Do you have to be willing to talk to people sitting at a bar or sitting in a bus station or sitting next to you on the plane? What is it that creates this experiential mindset? And how is it different in a way from a growth mindset?
We love the growth mindset. We love the beginner's mind and all that stuff. So I think the first thing to talk about is that the book is really about instilling urgency in your life to do the things that you want to do. So you don't have to be an extrovert. You don't have to be anything in particular. I just want to help people do the things that they really want to do in their life. Joe and I personally, maybe those things aren't the things that other people want to do. We've done some weird, crazy stuff. We trained to become samurai. We've done dog sledding. We became beekeepers. We did trapeze lessons, lived with monks. We've been hunting and fishing. And I went to farm school, all these random weird things. So a lot of people want to do those things. And that's totally cool. But maybe what they do want to do is play guitar or learn Spanish. So part of this book writing process, we did this big study of 20,000 people. It's like one of the largest surveys of life experiences ever done. And a lot of these people were 65 plus and looking back at the majority of their life. And we were asking them things like, what are your biggest regrets? What was your most valuable experience in life? What would you still like to do? And why haven't you done it? That was mind-opening because a lot of these things that people wanted to do were either free or cheap. And I think that's really a point I want to drive home, is that even though Joe and I have had some really incredible, quote unquote, bucket listy type experiences, like seeing the seven wonders of the world or seeing all 50 states, it really doesn't have to be about travel and it doesn't have to be this expensive thing. It can really just be as easy as I want to learn to speak Italian and I want to learn how to make my own bread or something. Things that people want, so small. So it's, how do we help them get to those?
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
Thanks.
How do you inspire people to create a clear vision for what they want? And is this similar to the treasure map, or is that something that's different?
Well, it's both, really. To build off of what Bridget said about how what we're trying to do is foster that urgency and cultivate that awareness of time is your most valuable resource. But the next thing is obviously, or hopefully even the first thing, is the awareness of what it is you want to do. And a lot of the time, most people we found, again, through their survey and just through our own personal experiences, a lot of people either don't know what they want to do, or they've suppressed it. They've taken like their dreams or goals or the things that they've thought that would matter to them and just put them off onto this fictional, what we like to call someday calendar. They basically say, yeah, I'll do this someday. I'll do that someday. And then they just put it off until it's too late, because someday isn't a day on the calendar. And without a deadline, it's really hard to get things done. And everyone's guilty of this, where we have a deadline for work and for school and for our taxes and all kinds of things. And those things get done. But for our personal goals and dreams, we don't have deadlines. And as a result, they get pushed off to the back burner. And the study, that was one of those things that was just so alarming and glaring, is that that's the number one regret people have. It's the things they didn't do. It's not the things they did and that didn't go the way they wanted. It's literally the things they never did and never got around to. So we need to give that awareness through exercises like the treasure map. We use another couple of other tools, and I'll let Bridget go over that. But really, it's about the awareness and the intentionality. And to just tie that all in a nice little bow, though, is how you really do it is it's really by reclaiming your time and seeing all of the places that you're spending your time on things that don't add value to your life. And this really, I think, ties to what Bridget said about it's not about climbing Mount Everest or big bucket list things. It's about filling your time with things that will add value to your life. And that requires being aware and having intention. So some of the exercises Bridget can go through.
So I think like the first thing, and I'm sure that like many of the listeners have heard of a memento mori chart, but that's in the beginning of our book, where it's basically 76 boxes, which is the average American lifespan, which is a lot shorter than a lot of what people think. So it's jarring, but it's so important to look at. For me, I look at it every single day. There's 76 boxes. I'm 38, so I'm exactly halfway through the average American lifespan. So when I look at it, it might seem really weird. Why would I look at this scary thing? But it inspires me to do the things that I want to do now. And then in the first chapter of our book, we go into this exercise called the treasure map. That's really the cornerstone exercise of the book, because everything is built off of this. So the book is like a path to becoming rich in life experiences. So the treasure map exercise is exactly what Joe is saying, where it's figuring out what you want, because a lot of people don't know what they want. And this helps people. So the first step in the exercise is imagine your doctor just called and it's really bad news. He is telling you that you only have 1 year left to live. So what you would do is you'd take out a sheet of paper and you'd write down the top 10 things you'd want to do if you only had 1 year left to live. And the next step is to look at that list and see how many of those things are you working on right now. And this is really the moment that people have the wake-up calls, because usually the answer is zero or one thing that you're currently working on, which is terrifying, obviously, because you really don't know when your life is going to end. So why aren't you working on any of the things that are important to you? If it's one of the top 10 things you want to do in your life, why aren't you working towards that? So we take the exercises further, and there's two other steps where it's like, okay, now you have 30 days. Now you have 24 hours. Obviously, in 24 hours, you're not going to be like, I'm going to go to Antarctica. You're going to call your sister. You're going to call your friends, call your family. Like, you're not going to do anything crazy. And I think that is another thing that I love to think about. It's why aren't those things on your to-do list today if that's what you would do on your last day? So after that, we take the list and we add in some things that are maybe more long-term. What do you want to do in 5-10 years? And then we take the reader through this journey of figuring out what the very, very most important things are, and then how to get to them. And how to get to them is, very long story short, but making these small steps towards your goals and getting accountability partners, doing things like maybe you want to be a surfer. So you're going to put out your surfboard the night before and it's going to be staring you in the face when you wake up and you're like, okay, now I'm going to go surfing because it's reminding you every day. There's a lot of little steps and little things that we go through in the book that can help people achieve the experiences that they want out of life. Because what we really want is to have these lives that have very little regrets at the end of them.
I was going to add in that the regret part of it, nobody ever regrets the morning that they get up and go for a hike, but people at the end of their life say things like, I wish I spent more time in nature. And those are things that are really fixable. And those are things that people, once they are aware of it, they can make those small changes that lead to really, really big results.
Yeah. And just general health, mental and physical health. It's like a lot of times people will say, oh, I wish I went hiking more. If you just do that and you put it on the calendar. A lot of the book is, okay, if it doesn't get scheduled, it doesn't get done. You got to actually do the things that you want to do and not just push it off.
I'm curious how you think about habit change, because you talk about fear and doubt in the book. And for a lot of people that are in their routines, how do you help people get over that hurdle? So it's one thing to do a vision board and to write down all the things you wish you would do, but to really take action, what advice do you have for people who want to do these new things, but they're struggling with fear or failure or dealing with the emotions of being a beginner again at something? What's your advice on that? And what have you learned personally?
A lot of that stuff is overcome. Action really creates inspiration. So if you're afraid, again, when I wanted to do stand-up comedy, like I was terrified, just completely terrified. And then I signed up and I figured out when open mic night was and I signed up for it. And then I actually got a friend that also wanted to do it to sign up as well. So those are two things to illustrate that are really powerful tools for accomplishing your goals is I committed to something. I took a small step. I picked the day and signed up. And then I got an accountability partner that also could hold me accountable. So when the time came to actually go and do it, we were in it together, or there's a very good chance I may have chickened out, right? So that's why your relationships are really, really important. From a health and longevity and mental health standpoint, there's all kinds of data that shows that having strong social connections leads to a longer, healthier lifespan. And the way to really foster those relationships is through doing things together and building trust and bonds with relationship, with experiences in mind, I think. But so to get to a real transformative space where you're in one place and you want to get to a whole nother lifestyle, it's still baby steps. I think that the thing that you need to do is you start to teach yourself by telling yourself it's a fear thing. You say, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? Because usually we over-exaggerate what the worst thing is, and we definitely underestimate what the best outcome could be. So you start to tell yourself that and you start trying things once you start to realize that the value is probably a lot greater than the negative potential. And as those things happen, you start to build. You start to go, okay, that wasn't so bad. Bridget likes to always share a story about how she didn't start surfing until she lived in LA for 14 years because she was afraid. She thought she'd be embarrassed and people would make fun of her. And she missed out on 14 years of surfing because she was afraid. But when she went, it broke down all those barriers and she was able to then continue and have fun doing something that changed her life in a lot of ways. Having accountability partners, taking small steps, putting things on your calendar, changing the way you think about things that you might have fear. What else, Bridget?
I think for me, a good example is public speaking. I grew up terrified of public speaking. It's the number one fear, which crazy. It's like more than death is public speaking. This is not abnormal. Like I grew up very terrified of it and I never thought that I could do it. And then as we started gaining some visibility with Listen, I was getting asked a lot to go speak at conferences, but I would always say no. I'd always make up some excuse like, oh, I'm out of town or whatever. It was complete BS just because I was afraid of it. But then one time I got this just incredible opportunity to do this event where Richard Branson was speaking at. And I was like, I'm just going to get through this fear because that is the craziest opportunity. And I'll never get that opportunity again. I did it, even though I literally blacked out. It was so scary. And afterward, I got the opportunity to sit down with him and he was telling me that he's still scared of public speaking. And I'm like, if this guy's scared, it's okay. I can be scared of it too. And then afterward, there was like a party and I will never forget, because this is what set me on the path that I'm on now, is that these people came up to me and they're like, we heard your story when you were speaking and we're going to start a company that also gives back. So that started this ripple effect from just me talking about my story, that someone else is going to start this company and then they're going to help other people. And then hopefully those people will help other people. I sat down with myself and I'm just like, am I really not going to do this because I'm just scared? Come on, get over yourself. But people aren't even looking at you like they think you. It's like the spotlight effect. Everybody thinks that they're being looked at, but really nobody cares.
Right. They're doing their shopping list.
Yeah.
So I'm like, come on, let's get through it. So I think a lot of it is exposure. I'm scared. Another quick example is I went to all 50 states as one of my big goals in life. And I think that really helps me with fear, because if you look at the news, it's just fear, fear, fear. Like there's feeding you that you should be afraid of the other, quote unquote, whatever the other is, whether it's the Midwest or if it's on the coast or wherever you are, you're trained to be afraid of what the other is. And if you go and meet everyone in all these different states and all these different countries, you're like, oh, they're just like me. And it's, I don't have to be afraid of other people.
There is a meditation called Just Like Me. Do you have any contemplative practices, or do you meditate? What do you do to ground yourselves in this somewhat frenetic lifestyle?
Now I'm going to go listen to the Just Like Me thing. Me personally, I actually now, like I have had a very chaotic lifestyle for a long time, but I really just enjoy spending time at home and I still travel a lot. But for me, I really love to be in nature. Every single day, my thing is getting up right before sunrise and watching the sunrise. If I'm home, I try to watch the sunset as well. So that's like a very simple thing. It's free. I do it almost every single day. And that really grounds me on my day. Like I've done TM and a lot of other meditative things, but I would say that's probably the most common thing that I do.
I spent a lot of time meditating right around the time that my father actually passed away. And I got away from it, but I carry with me a lot of the concept and principles that help me deal with things on a daily basis. But I've recently been much more focused on just daily gratitude type of meditations, short gratitude meditations. Ironically, as we're writing this book about the urgency of life and the shortness of life, and basically, we finished the first draft of this book a year ago, and it was supposed to come out last year. Ironically and sadly, my wife was diagnosed suddenly with stage 3 metastatic breast cancer, and we went through a year-long battle. She was an absolute warrior, and she beat it. She's cancer-free now. Again, it was very powerful because I've spent a long time living this way with the knowledge that because of what happened when I was so young with my dad, that I don't know how much time that we have. And so my wife and I felt like we had really gotten everything in the decade before her diagnosis. So there wasn't any real regret of what we should have done or could have done. Or in our future, there's like the same plan now moving forward as it was. We think a lot about intentionality and awareness, but it just brings that gratitude for every day. And when you have that gratitude, I think that's important to really highlight, just because when you to have gratitude for every day and every moment, that gives you that awareness of the preciousness of it all and that urgency. When you're like, I'm so thankful that I woke up today and it's a beautiful day out. It's like, what am I going to do with this day, this magical day that I've been given? I'm not going to sit and waste it now. I can't be that happy to have this day and then not do something with it.
You can always make more money, but you can never make more time. I think that that wraps up our lifestyle in our book, in our talks, in a bow. Money can come and go, but you're never going to get that time back. So spend the time. That's the most important thing, like how to spend your time.
Joe, when you were traveling around on many of these adventures, was your wife with you, or did you have to deal with being apart from your loved one?
I met my wife actually right after Bridget and I started Listen and started working together. And there was a lot of trips that we would meet on. And there was a lot of times that we had to be apart as well. we started a family just a few years ago, 4 years ago. So I've definitely tried to spend much more time at home. I was lucky to have been able to do that because of COVID.
The good side of COVID.
Yeah, the good side of COVID. I got a lot of family time. But yeah, there are times that we spend apart. And we actually both, I think, enjoy it. We spent probably 3/4 of the year together, the first 6 or so years of our relationship, and the other quarter we were apart. I think that built like a really great foundation because we both were really aware of like the things we wanted to do individually.
It's interesting to look at the different experiences that you want to build into your life at different stages of your life. When you're young and you're single, maybe there's one set of things that you can do. I'm curious how you integrate family, children, partners into these experiences. Or is this the most wonderful way to have a relationship, to be together when you're together and then to go off and do some experiences together and some experiences not together?
Yeah, it's definitely both. I can give you a couple of great personal examples. From a value standpoint, I definitely look at, would I rather go to Cabo and go golf and drink with my friends or be with my son and teach him how to ride a bike? I'm going to stay with my son every time. But if there's something that really is meaningful to me that I want to do, I have to do those things also because I want my kids to learn by my example. Because you can tell my kids as they're growing up, hey, do the things that matter to you. But if they see me never do anything and just stay home with my family all the time, they're going to be more like me than what I say. So I want to make sure that I follow through with like my personal intentions. And then the things together, there's so many things to do together. And by the way, in terms of like cheap and easy, like I like to share the story of like, I dressed up as a minion for my son's 4-year-old birthday party and ran around a park for an hour. And that was pretty free. And it was literally one of the best days for almost everyone there. I think it was a really, really fun time. So there's a lot of ways to incorporate fun experiences with your kids that people, I think, look at their kids as like a burden sometimes because it's hard with kids, but find those moments to make special. And then for me, I am going to take a trip back to visit my wife's family in Europe in next month for the holidays. And while we're there, we're actually going to take our kids and we're going to go to Finland and we're going to go to Santa's village. Now, like, it's a lot of work. I'm not going to lie, though. It's 2 flights and it's 2 small children. And it's definitely, you know, we had to plan and buy tickets and all that. But we'll have that forever. Even if they don't remember it, you know, we're going to have pictures of them in Finland and Santa's village. And those are the kind of things that I highly prioritize.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like it has to do with the attitude with which you approach life. So you can have these experiences throughout your life and maybe they change, but there's still some excitement and richness in there.
Yeah, it's giving them like a different generational wealth. We don't know if we're going to pass on wealth technically, but we can give people these experiences and now going to have that same thing with their kids. And that's awesome. I wish I had that.
Yeah, such wonderful memories. For each of you, what have been your top 2 experiences as experiential billionaires?
I'll throw out the 2 obvious, getting married and having my kids. Those are obvious, but we'll take those out of the equation because I think most people probably say that. And for me, I have another very personal one, which was the day that they said that my wife was cancer-free. That was obviously an incredible day, an incredible experience. But yeah, the first time I was able to do something really big that helped other people was really important. I remember being on the ground in a part of Haiti and we were doing water filtration. And it was just really powerful just being able to think that I can make a choice and take some steps and actually try to do something and wind up doing something that hopefully changed someone else's life. That's a really powerful thing to do. So for me, I'd say it was like the giving trips, that and Bridget and I both being able to witness people hearing for the first time. We're helping give hearing aids in remote parts of the world is really powerful stuff.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I definitely agree. Giving 50,000 people hearing for the first time drastically changed my life and how I look at the world and how I interact with people and how I have so much more gratitude in my life for the little things. And I think when I was really depressed in 2020, when I went through that experience, that was the worst experience of my life, but it was also the best because now I am truly, truly grateful for every single day. When I wake up happy, I'm, oh my God, being happy is amazing. those little things.
That's a big thing.
That's a big thing. And you hear that all the time where there's like a negative experience that turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to somebody. And that's what happened to me. I'd say from a big travels or whatever experience standpoint, I think seeing the Northern Lights in Iceland was pretty epic. Going on safari, trekking with silverback gorillas, that was also one of the coolest things I've ever done.
Don't forget swimming with sharks in the South Pacific. That was great.
We always tried to would go to these crazy places in the middle of nowhere, and we would be giving, doing this stuff. And then at first we were like, okay, we're just going to go there and work and then leave. Like the first time we went to Peru, we went for 2 weeks. We worked all day, every single day, and then went home, and we didn't do anything other than that. And it was still great, but it was also, we were like, okay, the next time we go, we're going to plan, right? We're going to do these cool things that are in Peru. We're going to go to Machu Picchu. We're going to go to the salt mines and things like that. And that ended up just being the coolest thing because it was like a mix of work and pleasure. And that's what I tried to do from then on.
It's amazing that you guys found each other and that you both said, when we were doing the introduction, you both said you feel like one person. It's amazing to find that person that is the most amazing friend. I don't know what you call each other, but it's unusual and it's just wonderful. I want to ask you, what is next for you guys? So you had all these experiences, you've worked together for, is it 10 years now? 12 years, did you say?
I think 11 years.
11, okay. 11 years. What's the next big adventure and or service, or what have you guys committed to? What's next on your treasure map?
So definitely speaking, we're doing a lot of keynote speaking and a lot of workshops, and it's really about helping people have the experiences they want of life. It's been super rewarding every single time we do a speech or anything and someone comes up to us afterward and says, you inspired me to do this. And that's just the coolest thing ever. And I'm really enjoying that. So for me, that's what's next. We have a lot of little things as well, but that's the big thing.
Yeah, we're trying to create this shift, people's mindsets, where people realize that they can do these things and that they can live these really the most rich and rewarding life. Because we all know there's people that have a ton of money and aren't happy and are miserable. And there's people that don't have much at all and they're super happy. And it's just really interesting that the common thread seems to be the people that are happy are the people that feel like their life was meaningful and that they filled it with meaningful stuff. So we're just trying to get as many people to get on board there so that they don't have those end of life regrets.
I have a feeling I know the answer to this next question, which is something I ask all my guests. But for each of you, what are three pieces of advice you would give your younger selves?
For me, I think the number one thing I regret is always spending too much time on something that is not fulfilling or not going to work. Look back at relationships, for example, or jobs. And I knew in the time I was like, this isn't going to work. But then I was comfortable. So I'm just going to stay in this job or relationship. And then it was years gone by. I look back and I'm like, I could have gotten out of that 2 years ago, but I didn't because I felt comfortable and I felt afraid. So I guess I would tell my younger self to just cut and run if you have to.
Cut and run. I love that.
Yeah, I would say similarly. Yeah, I guess I think I got really good really early on at putting things on my calendar and doing things. And I had a lot of failures, a lot of massive, massive obstacles and failures that happened that I really think made me who I am and that helped me grow. But I still think I operated a lot of the time from a place of fear. There was a lot of things that I still didn't do that I would have done if I wasn't so afraid of what might happen. I wish I understood that better. It really takes really failing on a spectacular level in one way or another, or going through something really traumatic to then come out the other side and realize I'm still going to be okay. And then that gives you the power to really start trying the most important things, the bigger things.
Yeah, not caring what other people think.
That's a good one.
It just doesn't matter. And all young people, they think it's more important what other people think. But I wish that I could go back in time and tell myself that. It would have saved me a lot of heartache for sure.
Yeah, that's such good advice. You guys, is there anything that you want to share before we close that we haven't covered?
On our website, we've got a lot of free resources like guidebooks and free exercises. And we also have a card deck that we sell that has 52 exercises you can do to
live a
more rewarding life. So we would love for people to check that out, experientialbillionaire.com.
Yeah, and just start to change the way that people think about wealth. Think about what it means to be wealthy and be wealthy in life.
Yeah, that's such a great message. Thank you both for being here. It's really been so wonderful. So appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks again. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks for joining us today. For more information on Joe and Bridget and the Experiential Billionaire, head over to experientialbillionaire.com. There will be lots of tools for you to explore. Check out Muse at choosemuse.com and the Meditation Studio app for hundreds of guided meditations. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions, send us an email at untangle@choosemuse.com. We love having you with us and are always grateful for your reviews. Have a great week, and we will see you next time.